Okay, now we begin Maseches Demai in earnest, Perek Aleph, Mishnah Aleph, 1-1. This whole perek deals with leniencies that apply to Demai, since really Midoraisa, it's mutter to eat as is. The first Mishnah here discusses certain species of produce, fruits essentially, that are exempt from the Demai requirements of tithing, let's call it a second time. The reason for these leniencies, according to Reish Lakish, who's the Pshat I'm going to say here now, in the Yerushalmi, is that there's a sfeik sfeika, there's a double doubt if they're required to be tithed, and since it's a double doubt, we are totally lenient. The first doubt is, like I said before in the introduction, who knows if this food has been tithed properly? Maybe it has, maybe it hasn't. So if it has, then it wouldn't need tithing, and that's at least the first of the two sides of the sfeik. But maybe it hasn't. But even if it hasn't been tithed properly, there's a second possibility. Second possibility is that this particular produce is not suspected of needing to be tithed altogether. Why would that be? So according to the Bar Tanur, it's because these types of produce are really low-grade produce that is growing in the wild and not cultivated normally by farmers. And then these people who are selling them essentially pick them from the wild. And as we saw in Maseches Peah, food that grows in the wild is exempt from tithes. So if these are just basically wild produce, so then they'd be exempt from tithes and altogether. And therefore, there's a sfeik sfeika, double doubt. The first, who says it wasn't tithed properly, and even if it wasn't tithed properly, well, maybe they need to get tithed because it came from the wild. There's a second pshat, not the Bar Tanura's pshat, but Rashi's pshat and the Rush and others, that the reason why these particular species are lenient is, again, a double doubt. The first, as before, who said it wasn't tithed, and the second, not because they grow in the wild and therefore they're not worth much, and that's why they wouldn't need to be tithed, but rather that because they're worth so little, even if they were cultivated, the farmers who cultivated them wouldn't have an objection to tithe them properly because they're worth so little is not much of a loss. The Mishnah reads, I'm going to use translations based on the art scroll, Mishnayos, Yad Avraham, and I will rely on them. Hakalan Sheba Demai, the Mishnah reads, these following species are lenient with respect to the halachas of Demai. The first is Hashisen. Shisen are some kind of wild figs. Vaharimen, a lotus fruit. Vozradin. Vozradin are like sorb apples, crab apples, something like that. Uvano Shuach, it's a different kind of fig, white figs. And Benos Shikma, sycamore figs. Novlos, these are dates that fell. Barton actually gives two pshatim here. The first is dates that didn't ripen properly while they're on the tree. Then they were like harvested early. And the second pshat is they were dates that fell from the tree from the wind. In any case, we had the word novlos, by the way, in Brachos for what it's worth, as one of the mine klala, if you recall. Yeah, Mishnah continues on. Hagufnin. Gufnin are grapes that ripen late in the season. These aren't grapes that are especially sweet, and that's why you save them till late, but rather grapes that really never ripen properly. And because of that, they don't taste very good and nobody really wants them, etc. And therefore, they are lenient when it comes to demai, like the other species. And finally, Hanitzpa. Nitzpa is the tzlaf, the caper. So, simple understanding here is these are actually capers, like you have on your locks or, you know, in Eretz Yisrael, capers grow everywhere, in case you haven't noticed. They're the green plant that's growing out of the kotel, and they grow wild and naturally, and therefore, like these other species, they're either inexpensive or not cultivated, they're hefker. Uvi Yehuda, in the land of Yehuda, meaning in Eretz Yisrael, the Eretz Yisrael is divided into the northern part, the Galilee, and the southern part, Judea. And we're talking out here in Judea. That was around the Beis HaMikdash area in Yerushalayim. We have Ha'og. Og, that's you translated also in the first parak of Peah, is sumac, sort of a red berry. And I told you that's the red that you'll see inside of za'atar, if you see red in za'atar. And apparently you can buy it, and people even eat it in their salads today, so I'm told. V'chomet sheb Yehuda, vinegar in Yehuda. Now, the backstory here is that the way one makes vinegar in the time of Chazal, is not with chemicals and not with apple cider. It's with red wine that is soured. So spoiled red wine is what is the source of vinegar. Now, there was a miracle that happened in the time of the Beis HaMikdash around Yehuda in the Judean region, around the Beis HaMikdash, since they needed their wine to give libations in Yerushalayim, the wine libations on the Mizbeach, on the altar. So a nace happened, and while the wine libations were going, the wine in Jerusalem there was spoiled. So therefore, the way they got their vinegar was not from fermented or spoiled wine, but rather from fermented temed. I'm unfamiliar with the English translation of the word temed. It means grape seeds that were left behind after the grape pressing that happened to make wine. So then those are essentially were abandoned garbage. But if you take those seeds and soak them in water, you can get a bit of, you know, grape flavor inside the water, and that can be fermented to make some kind of vinegar. So the idea here is that during the time of the Beis HaMikdash, the wine was created from hefker, abandoned garbage, grape seeds, and perhaps other pulp and stuff like that, from the, you know, skins, etc. And therefore it's hefker, and therefore exempt from Trumas Maestros, so purchasing such vinegar would not be required to be tithed, even as Demai. However, that only applies when the Beis HaMikdash was up and running and the libations were going. But after the fact, like with Mahazer or whatever, after the Chorban, so then the vinegar of Yehuda was the same as vinegar in anywhere else in the country, that it needed to be tithed, the one to purchase it, as Demai. And finally, Vakuzbar. It's actually a bit of a machlokus if Kuzbar is talking about specifically just in Yehuda or all Kuzbar. Kuzbar is coriander. That's the Zera God of the Pasuk, those white seeds or kind of like brown seeds. In modern Hebrew, Kuzbara is the name for coriander. Probably more familiar to those who live in Israel as being cilantro, because the cilantro is a plant and the seeds of the cilantro are the coriander seeds. If you don't know what coriander looks like or tastes like, if you've ever eaten biltong, which is a South African delicacy, like kind of South African version of beef jerky, so the main spice on the outside of the biltong is coriander seeds. So that coriander, again, is also like a wild seed, if you will, or hefker, and therefore it doesn't carry much value, and therefore can be assumed to not need tithing as demai, like all the rest in the list, because of that sveka. The double doubt, which is the shita of Reish Lakish. I will point out there's a second pshat on this Mishnah according to Rav Yochanan in the Rishalmi, but I'm not explaining that pshat because the Meforshei Mishnah don't go with that approach. We're holding Maseches Demai, Perek Aleph, Mishnah Base 1-2. The Perek continues on discussing the leniencies that apply to Demai with respect to normal untied produce. And this Mishnah will focus either primarily or exclusively on the leniencies with respect to the Meiser Sheni that has to be redeemed off of that Demai before the Demai can be eaten. So as we said in the previous Mishnah, in the introduction, we're worried about two separate things in Demai. The bottom line is first, we have to take essentially 1% of the food out of the Demai as Trumas Meiser. And secondly, we have to redeem any potential Meiser Sheni onto a coin before eating that Demai. Now, Meiser Sheni is subject to a number of restrictions, Midoraisa, but they are in many instances relaxed. If the Meiser Sheni we're talking about is Meiser Sheni removed from Demai, because remember, Demai is only Midorabanan. Midoraisa, since most of the food supply in the time of the Mishnah was properly tithed, including the Meiser Sheni, there's only a second attempt at removing Meiser Sheni out of Suffolk, out of doubt, which might be rabbinically required, but nevertheless, the rabbis were lenient in their requirements. So therefore, the Mishnah says, HaDemai, when it comes to Demai, Ein Lo Chomesh. There is no requirement for Chomesh. So let's learn this just as talking about Meiser Sheni, although that's contentious, but if we learn it's just Meiser Sheni, what we're talking about here is this. When one redeems the Kedusha off of Meiser Sheni food, he's Mechalel, he deconsecrates the food, transferring whatever Kedusha that would have been on the Meiser Sheni onto coins of the value of whatever we're talking about. So that would mean, if for argument's sake, there is 4 shekels worth of Meiser Sheni here, so then he would need to take 4 shekels of coins and transfer the 4 shekels of value of the Meiser Sheni onto those 4 shekel coins, and then he could take those 4 shekel coins up to Jerusalem to purchase foodstuffs over there. Now, the rule is that if a person is deconsecrating, redeeming his own Meiser Sheni, he needs to add a fifth coin for every four that he redeems worth of value. That is to say, if he's redeeming four shekels worth of Maestrini value, he actually has to put that onto five shekels. There's an extra surcharge. That surcharge is called a chomesh, an extra fifth, because he adds a fifth coin for every four coins. In English, we translate that as a 25% surcharge, a quarter surcharge, because he's adding 25% of the value of four to be five. But Chazal looked at it as the total amounts. He'll bring a total of five coins up to Jerusalem, four of which were the keren, the principal amount, the value of the Maaser Sheni, and the fifth coin is the surcharge. So Chazal referred to that as a chomesh. Now, the chomesh is required as a separate obligation, but it's not ma'akev. That is to say, if a person who had four shekels worth of Maaser Sheni redeems it onto just four shekels instead of the five shekels, that redemption does still work. It is effective, b'di'evid. So we have to differentiate between the chomesh, the extra fifth coin that's added for every four, and the keren, the original first four coins. Just a point of clarification, the obligation to add that fifth coin as a surcharge only applies if one is redeeming his own produce. If one is redeeming someone else's produce, then there's no requirement, there's no need of adding a fifth coin. In any case, so here the mission will say that since the requirement to add a fifth coin is only a separate extrinsic obligation, separate from the basic obligation to redeem the keren, the principal value of the Maaser Sheni, and since midoraisa it would work b'di'evid if he did only do the principal amount without adding the surcharge of the fifth. So the rabbis are lenient when it comes to demai, and they said if a person has demai and he has to remove the Maaser Sheni, since it's very possible there's no obligation to remove Maaser Sheni at all because most demai was tithed properly, the rabbis were lenient and said he must deconsecrate the Maaser Sheni that might be embedded in the demai, but he need not add that chomesh surcharge even if it's his own produce that he is deconsecrating. A second leniency with the demai Maaser Sheni is vein lo biur. There's no obligation of biur. The obligation called biur maestris, the destruction of the tithes, is that, as I said in the introduction, the agricultural cycle in Jewish law is 7 years long, the seventh year being the Shemitah year, where there are no tithes required. The other 6 years are actually divided into two mini-cycles of 3 years each. And we said that in the first 3 years, years one and two, are Maaser Sheni years, and that food is, as we said, taken up to Jerusalem and eaten there. That's our topic of our Mishnah. And that third year is Maaser Ani. Instead of taking food to Jerusalem, it's given to poor people. That was the topic of the last parak of Peah. And again, in years 4, 5, and 6, the first 2 years, years 4 and 5, are Maaser Sheni years, and the sixth year is again a Maaser Ani year. When each of those mini-cycles comes to an end, there's an obligation, a deadline, to have given away all of one's tithes. That is to say, the Truma Gedola and the Trumas Maaser that goes to the Kohanim, and the Maaser that goes to Levi, and the Maaser Ani that goes to the poor person, and the Maaser Sheni that should be eaten in Jerusalem, or the coins which have the Kedusha of the Maaser Sheni, they all have to be used up by the deadline. And if they're not used up by that deadline, they have to be destroyed or at least removed out of one's possession. So that deadline happens at the beginning of Pesach of the fourth and seventh year of that seven-year cycle. So there's a deadline, let's say on year four, come Erev Pesach, or according to some versions of the Mishnah and how the Rambam paskens, the seventh day of Pesach. That's the hard deadline. And any remaining Truma, Maaser, Maaser Sheni, Maaser Ani, or coins that had Maaser Sheni Kedusha must be destroyed, if not used, given, consumed as appropriate by then. Which would mean, under normal circumstances, if one has Maaser Sheni coins that were used to redeem bona fide Maaser Sheni, if at the deadline of Erev Pesach of years 4 and 7 they hadn't been deconsecrated back onto food and consumed in Jerusalem, those coins would have to be, say, thrown into the Dead Sea and gotten rid of. The Mishnah here says that we are lenient with coins that redeemed Maaser Sheni from Demai, and they have no hard deadline, they have no beer, those coins need not be destroyed. That's what the Mishnah is saying, the ain't no beer, the coins to redeem Maaser Sheni do not need to be destroyed at the beer Maaser's deadline. Next, the Mishnah says, v'ne'echa la'onen, it may be eaten by an onen. An onen is a person who lost one of his seven close relatives, that is his father, mother, sister, brother, son, daughter, or wife. I'm talking about unmarried sister, by the way. So on the day that that relative dies, a person is called an onen, It's like almost like a precursor of the Avelis period, and it lasts Midoraisa, the day of the death, and Midorabanan extending into the night after that first day. In any case, there's a prohibition of a onen, person in such a state, from eating Maaser Sheni. However, while that's true with bona fide Maaser Sheni taken from Demai has no such restriction, and that's what the Mishnah means when it says v'ne'echal la'onen, that the Maaser Sheni taken from Demai can be eaten by a person who is an onen. Next, the Mishnah says v'nichnas liyushalayim v'yotzi, which means it can go into Jerusalem and come out again. I learned this according to the Bar Tanura. What we're referring to here is Demai that goes into Jerusalem that has embedded Maaser Sheni. It can go out of Jerusalem again. What's that mean? When it comes to bona fide Maaser Sheni, the Torah doesn't allow for a person to deconsecrate that Maaser Sheni food onto coins in Jerusalem. And the rabbis extended that to say that once Maaser Sheni food entered Jerusalem, it may not leave Jerusalem again. The question then becomes, may Tevel, just food that hasn't been had any ties removed from it, that's brought into Jerusalem, come out again, because there's Maaser Sheni embedded in there? And the answer is rabbinically, no, it may not. However, if the food we're talking about is not regular food that has been untithed, Tevel, but Demai, questionably tithed foods, here the Mishnah says, according to the Bar Tanura, the Pshat is, one may, yes, take that food out of Jerusalem, even though the Maaser Sheni has not been removed from it, and he could still redeem that Maaser Sheni out of the Demai, even though it had been in Jerusalem and left its walls. Because again, the normal rule is when it comes to bona fide Tevel or Maaser Sheni, the walls of Jerusalem are kolet, they hold, so to speak, they hold that requirement to eat the Maaser Sheni as is, and the Maaser Sheni can no longer be redeemed. So the Mishnah here is saying we're lenient, and we're saying, according to Bar Tanura, that Demai that enters into Jerusalem can be taken out again, and it's still legitimate to redeem the Maaser Sheni out of that Demai, notwithstanding the fact it was in Jerusalem. The Mishnah continues on, Uma'ablin esmi utu bedrachim, which means one may destroy a bit of it along the way. Here we're talking about traveling up to Jerusalem. Now, there are two pshat in the Bar Tanura. The first is that if a person is going to Jerusalem and along the way he sees some Maaser Sheni, some bona fide Maaser Sheni, he's not allowed to leave it on the side of the road. He must bring it up to Jerusalem with him. Can't leave it to get eaten by the wild animals, etc. However, we're lenient when it comes to the Maaser Sheni that came from Demai. That is to say, if a person passed some Maaser Sheni that someone else left behind, and the Maaser Sheni was Demai Maaser Sheni, so he is allowed to leave it be and not take it up to Jerusalem with him. That's a leniency. That's the first pshat of the Bar Tanura. The Bar Tanura's second pshat, like the Rambam, is that we're talking about small loss that happens in transferring one's own Maaser Sheni up to Jerusalem. The idea being if you had Demai, then you extracted Maaser Sheni out of it, and then a little bit of that, somehow that Maaser Sheni food got, you know, it evaporated, or it was this, there was a small drip or something. One need not go to any sort of, you know, superhuman efforts to prevent any loss in one's Maaser Sheni if that Maaser Sheni is Demai Maaser Sheni. But, however, if it were real bona fide Maaser Sheni, Midoraisa, then one would have to do whatever is in his power to prevent even the smallest bit of it from getting lost along the way. The Mishnah continues, V'nosno la'am ha'aretz, one may give his Maaser Sheni that came from Demai to an am ha'aretz. And normally the rule is, when it comes to Maaser Sheni, you may not give it to an am ha'aretz. An am ha'aretz is someone who hasn't formally accepted upon himself the rules of keeping tahor. And therefore, even though we don't think an am ha'aretz is a liar or deceitful, but we do think he's ignorant, even though he's well-meaning and intends to be tahor when he says he's tahor, he may well be mistaken and still be tummy. That being the case, since there's a requirement to eat Maaser Sheni b'tahara, and the am ha'aretz can't be assumed to be tahor, it's forbidden to give Maaser Sheni to an am ha'aretz to eat. However, if we're talking, as our Mishnah is, about the Maaser Sheni that comes from Demai, the rabbis were lenient and said one could give that Maaser Sheni food to an am ha'aretz, since probably it's not really Maaser Sheni, and therefore probably it's not a problem for this am ha'aretz to eat it, even if he is tamei, which of course he may not be anyways. The Mishnah continues on by saying, V'yochal kenegdo, which literally means, and he will eat a parallel amount to it. This is quite hard to understand. The meaning of the Mishnah is that if a person gives, you know, whatever it is, an apple that's Maaser Sheni to an Ama Aretz, and that is permissible in the event that the apple was taken from Demai, meaning a Demai set of apples, and one apple was taken off of the Maaser Sheni, one may give it to the Ama Aretz. But if he does, when he goes to Jerusalem, he has to eat an extra apple from Chulin, just a generic apple from the marketplace or from his reservoir of apples, as if it were Maaser Sheni, meaning he has to eat that apple, the Tahara, in the walls of Jerusalem, like, so to speak, you know, an extra apple, as if it were Maaser Sheni, to, as it were, compensate for the apple that was given away to the Ama Aretz. That's the pshat in the Mishnah. The question is, why would that be necessary? What could it help? Whether the Ama Aretz was or wasn't tamei, this is no way to sort of fix that. It doesn't have any impact on that. They're just adding an extra apple and pretending it's Maaser Sheni. So one explanation given to Chazon Ish is that we want to give some kind of economic disincentive for abusing this leniency of the rabbis. That is to say, the rabbis did allow you to give your Maaser Sheni from Demai to an Ama Aretz, but they didn't want you to do it without any skin in the game, so to speak, just, you know, willy-nilly, without any hesitation or any, you know, any downside. And therefore, they said at least as some kind of disincentive, so they shouldn't do it too much, that if you do give Maaser Sheni that came from Demai to an Ama Aretz, you have to have some kind of economic disincentive and sort of supplement your eating in Jerusalem with an extra parallel amount. The Mishnah continues on, Umachal naso kesef al kesef, nechoshes al nechoshes, kesef al nechoshes, nechoshes al peros. One may, says the Mishnah, transfer the Kedusha from one silver coin to another silver coin. That would mean that if a person had his, you know, barrels of wine and there was Maaser Sheni, he bought the barrels of wine as Demai, he wants to remove the Maaser Sheni, and he wants to then take that Maaser Sheni wine, not in the form of wine, but as coins, he can transfer the Kedusha from the Maaser Sheni and the Demai wine onto a coin. And now we're saying that he could also, if he needed that coin or wanted to remove it off that coin, he could transfer it to a different coin, another silver coin. Now the rule is, when it comes to bona fide Maaser Sheni, that's not allowed. A person may not transfer from one silver coin to another silver coin unless the second silver coin has greater currency than the first silver coin. Let's say it's more accepted in that region, or it's a new king, etc. Then it would be allowed. Otherwise, one may not just keep on transferring willy-nilly. But one may transfer from one silver coin to another silver coin of equal, you know, equal currency as a leniency for Maaser Sheni that came from Demai. Same goes on Nechoshes al Nechoshes. You can transfer from one copper coin to another copper coin, which would be prohibited when it comes to standard bona fide Maaser Sheni. Kesef al Nechoshes. Normally, silver is considered to be more current, more easy to transfer and purchase things than copper coins, and therefore actually might allow for a cheaper purchase of foodstuff if purchased in silver as opposed to copper, and therefore it's prohibited to transfer from silver to copper when it comes to the Kedusha that was taken off of bona fide Maaser Sheni. But here it's just rabbinic Maaser Sheni because of Demai, and therefore we're lenient. And even one can transfer from Nechoshes al Haperos, from a copper coin, onto other foodstuffs. That is to say, he could, let's say he had a copper coin that had the Kedusha of Maaser Sheni that came from Demai. So he could take that Kedusha and transfer from the copper coin onto another foodstuff, you know, whatever it is, you know, a barrel of wheat, and then later on, perhaps take the barrel of wheat to eat in Jerusalem or not, as we'll see more in the Mishnah. But the point is that now we've got the cycle has been from Demai food onto a coin, and from the coin back onto a different food. We're saying that's still legitimate. Certainly not legitimate when it comes to bona fide Maaser Sheni, but yes, allowed for Maaser Sheni that came from Demai. Now, the next words of the Mishnah, as we have the Girsa, is Ubilvad Shiyachazor V'yifte Es HaPeros, Divrei Meir. Provided that one doesn't bring that, say, barrel of wheat up to Jerusalem to eat it there, but rather he exchanges the kedusha, transferring it off the barrel of wheat back onto new coins. That's because the pasuk requires that one go to Jerusalem with in the coins in hand, and specifically coins, not foodstuff. So Rav Meir, according to this gear, sort of requires that it go back into coins before going to Jerusalem. The Girsa, the version of the Mishnah according to the Bar Tanura and others, and for good reason for various kashas, understands that that word ubilvaj should be taken out and the shin should be changed to a vav. So the Mishnah should read, according to the Bar Tanura's Girsa, unechoshes ala peros, you can transfer from a silver coin that had the Kedusha of Maaser Sheni from Demai onto some kind of food, like the barrel of wheat. And the Yachas or Vifte es aperos, the Rameir holds, if you want to, you are allowed to yet again transfer from the barrel of wheat onto another coin, a second coin. You don't have to. You could if you want to. So there's two versions of Rameir. Either way, the Chacham disagree and the Chacham say, Yala haperos v'yechilu b'Yerushalayim. The Chacham hold that you must take that barrel of wheat, in my example, to Jerusalem and eat it there. In other words, that's the end. You could take it onto a coin once, but not to a second time. And therefore, the wheat as is must be taken to Jerusalem. So if you're following, it will come out then that according to the version of the Mishnah, as we have it in front of us, Rabbi Meir is machmir, and he requires that the barrel of wheat be re-deconsecrated back onto a coin, and specifically coins must come to Jerusalem. The rabbis are lenient, saying, no, you don't have to do that. The other version of Rameir is the makel. He's being lenient. He says, if you want to, you can leave it as is. If you want, you can convert it to coins. And the Chum say, no, it's not your choice. You must bring those fruit up as are, and that barrel of wheat, and eat it in Jerusalem. You can't do a second deconsecration to a new coin. Halach, of course, like the Chachamim. Meseches Demai, Perek Aleph, Mishnah Gimel, 1-3. This Mishnah continues on, as the whole Perek does, talking about the leniencies that apply to Demai. Here we're talking about leniencies with regard to using Demai products. Usually when one talks about Tevel, bona fide untithed produce, so it's forbidden to eat it without tithing it, and it's also forbidden to make use of it in a way that destroys the Tevel. So we're going to see here that Demai certainly is forbidden to be eaten without first separating the Demai tithes, but we will allow it to be used for other purposes, even though the Demai, the produce, is destroyed in the process. The Mishnah says, Halokech lazera b'lebehema. If a person purchases Demai and his plan is to use it for seeding his field, so he purchases wheat and then uses it as wheat seed, so grow a wheat field, or b'lebehema, to feed to his animals, so normally that would be forbidden if it's tevel proper. You have to first tithe the tevel before using it for planting. And once you finish processing the food, you can't feed it to your animals after Gemar Malacha without first tithing it, but with Demai or Makel in both cases. In addition, when it comes to Tevel, if one plants it and the seed dissolves, you know, it wastes away before the thing regrows, then the the produce that comes from such a seed is allowed to be consumed and has a regular status as regular food. However, when you plant, let's say, a bulb, which doesn't really get lost when you plant it, and a new plant grows from that bulb, that would be forbidden for consumption since the bulb was tevel. But none of that applies with Demai. If one takes a Demai bulb and plants it, then the produce that comes from that is permissible. Mishnah continues on, Kemach L'oros. If a person purchases Demai wheat, let's say, to make wheat flour and use that flour for tanning hides. The wheat acts as a desiccant to dry out the leather hides, and it's an essential part of the tanning process, and it consumes the wheat flour along the way. So if a person purchases wheat flour for industrial use, like for example for tanning hides, and what he purchased was Demai, he need not take further Demai tithes before using that Demai flour for tanning his hides. And similarly, Shemen Lanair, if he buys, let's say, olive oil, and the olive oil is Demai, he can use it as is for lighting a candle and not tithe it a second time. And similarly, Shemen Lasuchbo es Akelim, if he's using the oil as like an industrial lubricant to anoint, to grease up his utensils, or if it's used as a way to prevent rust. Similarly, you know, like WD-40 style, putting the oil on the utensils, they shouldn't, you know, as a prevent it from water getting in and making it rusty. Again, even though it does consume the oil, the demai, it's permissible, which would not be the case if it were tevel proper. All these things are putter, min ha-demai, they're all exempt from the demai tithe. Now, the next part of the mission discusses regions where one purchases foodstuffs and where they're considered demai. The idea here is that when one purchases food, it's presumed to be locally produced and not imported from a distance. And therefore, once you leave the area that has the biblical requirements of tithing, so then there'd be no requirements for rabbinic tithing of demai. So what happened was originally when Klal Yisrael came in from Mitzrayim, there was a certain border set. When they left, there was a bit of a reset. So when the Jews came back a second time under Ezra and by Sheni time, that part of the country which was Kavush was conquered by the Olei Bavel, those who came back with Ezra, etc. So that is the new borders of Eretz Yisrael that are subject to the laws of tithing and therefore subject to the rabbinic requirements of demai. If one goes beyond those borders and purchases foodstuff, there's no reason to, no rabbinic requirement to take the demai tithes. It should be spoken out here that although Midoraisa, the borders of Israel, were those which were conquered by Ezra when he came back, rabbinically, the rabbis extended the requirements to Bavel since Jews were there and there's a lot of commerce between the two places, as well as the countries bordering Eretz Israel directly, meaning Ammon and Moab, that's modern-day Jordan, as well as Egypt to the south, and Syria, which is more or less modern-day Syria, which has slightly different halachas, to the north. In any case, here we're giving just the northern border, and we're saying Mikaziv ulahalan patamina demai. From the town of Kaziv and further north, that's considered to be beyond the borders of the Ole Bavel, those who came from Bavel and beginning of Baisheni, and it's not subject to demai. Kaziv is actually presumed to be the modern day area of Achziv, which is about, say, 8 miles north of Akko and about 2 miles south of the current modern Israel's border at the Rosh HaNikra, there on the northwest corner of Israel. The Mishnah continues on to say there are four categories of food which are not subject to the laws of demai at all. There's a machlokas, the reason why. According to Rav Yochanan, Chazal were never gozer on these four things, and according to Rav Oshia, who the Bar Tanura follows, it's because Amei Haaretz will be careful with these four things because of the sanctity that's involved and be careful to tithe properly. The Bar Tanura goes with Rav Oshia Shita, so we'll say that, that we're assuming here that the Amei Haaretz is particular to tithe these four things because they involve sanctified foodstuff. The Rambam, however, paskins like the Rav Yochanan, and there are significant afkaminas. If it's just according to Rav Yochanan and the Rambam, it's just the Chazal would never gozer the din of demai in these four areas. In any case, the list is number one, chalas ama aretz. The chala taken from an ama aretz is dough. That is to say, an ama aretz, he has dough. He has a requirement to take a portion of that dough as chala, hafrashas chala for the Kohen. And when he gives that to the Kohen can eat it as is. He need not tithe it as demai. That is to say, we're confident that, according to the Bar Tanura, we're confident that the Am Haaretz would be careful to not mess up the mitzvah of challah by not tithing it properly, and therefore he would be careful to tithe properly in giving the gift of challah, the mitzvah of challah, to a Kohen, and therefore we do not require the Kohen to do the demai tithe. V'hamaduma. Meduma, if you remember in the introduction to the Masechta, I said that demai might come from the word meduma. Demai is with an aleph and meduma with an ayin, but meduma is a mixture of truma, or equally halachic things like trumas meiser, etc., that gets mixed with chulin, normal food. The normal rule is that when things get mixed, typically there's either bitul barov or a bitul b'shishim. If you have a dry mixture, you'd have 60 times against what annulled the one part of iser. Here, if we're talking about truma, the bar is raised a bit, and 60 times of chulin against truma would not annul the truma. It's still forbidden to eat by non-Kohen until you get to 99 or 100 times chulin against one part of truma. And it's machlokas 99 a bit or 100 times against. In either case, if a mixture contains one part of truma to 99 parts of chulin or less than that, amount of chulin, then the mixture is called meduma and it's forbidden for non-Kohen to eat. Instead, the owner of that mixture would sell the mixture to a kohen, it's only a kohen could eat it, and he wouldn't be able to charge the kohen for that extra piece of truma that already belonged to the kohen. In any case, if a am haaretz has a meduma mixture and he gives it to a kohen, the kohen can assume, says the mission here, that the am haaretz would be careful because in deference to the truma mixed in, to tithe this mixture properly, and therefore he not need to take tithes of the maya second time. The third category is balakuach bekesef maaser sheni, that food which is purchased with the money that came from maaser sheni. So again, you recall, when one takes maaser sheni, if he doesn't want to go to Jerusalem with it, the physical food, he can redeem the kedusha off the maaser sheni onto coins and bring those coins to Jerusalem and then use that to buy foodstuffs in Jerusalem. Now, when that process happens at each step of the way, there's a kedusha that's transferred first from the maaser sheni onto the money, and then from the money onto the newly purchased foodstuff in Jerusalem. So that new food also is sanctified in Jerusalem and it must be eaten in Jerusalem, betahara, etc. And therefore, if you have food that was purchased with money that had redeemed maaser sheni, the food that was purchased by the am haaretz can be presumed to be properly tithed, because the am haaretz would properly tithe the food and ensure it's properly done in deference to the mitzvah and sanctity of maaser sheni. And finally, the fourth category is ushiarim hamenachos, leftovers, the shirayim of menachos, of meal offerings. When one brings a meal offering, as many amaratzim do for whatever reasons, the Beis HaMikdash, a little bit of it, a kamitza, is offered, but typically the rest is going to be consumed and eaten by the kohanim. So the question would be, do the kohanim need to be afraid that this wasn't properly tithed and it's demai? The Mishnah's answer is no. You do not need to be afraid of that. And according to Bartanura, the pshat would be, the reason why is because once they're doing the mitzvah, bring a mincha, corporate mincha, the am haaretz would be careful to tithe it properly. Therefore, the kohen has no reason to be afraid. In all those cases, patur min ha-demai, those four categories are exempt from the demai obligations. Finally, shemen arev, which is pleasant oil. There's a machlok, so what the pshat here is, we'll go with the bartender's first pshat first, which is pleasant smelling oil. Shemen afarsimon, balsam oil, smells good. So the question is, if one is partaking of oil but not eating it, rather smelling it, does that already require the demai ties for the fear that this oil is not properly tied and is actually tevel? Beishamay says yes, this is a demai obligation if you're just going to smell it. And Beishil Potrim, Beishil, who the lach of course follows, is no, you don't need to take demai tithes if you're not actually eating it, you're just smelling it. There's a second pshat here that we're talking here about olive oil that's used as a salve on one's hands. It's olive oil that's mixed with myrrh and aloe to sort of heal the hands. But that's I'll leave that pshat aside for later on. The idea, if that would be the pshat, is that there's usually a din of sicha kashtia, that one who anoints with something has a din as if he drank that thing. So then one might have thought, if he anoints his hands with the olive oil, it would be like consuming it and eating it and would first require tithing. It's like drinking it. So Beis Hillel say, no, it isn't. And we'll see in the next mission that's a more difficult pshat to maintain. And therefore, we'll stick to the first pshat as the one to remember, which is if it's just smelling produce, like balsam oil, it's just for smelling, then according to Beis Hillel, no demai tithes required. Beis Shammai say there is, but the lach, of course, is like Beis Hillel. Maseches Demai, Perek Aleph, Mishnah Dalet, 1-4. The last Mishnah, the Perek, that discusses leniencies which apply to Demai. Here, the main point is that Demai is actually forbidden to be eaten until one ties it properly, as per the rules we described before, getting out the Trumas Meiser and the Meiser Sheni, the Kedusha Meiser Sheni anyways. And therefore, one ought not eat it without doing that stuff. So the question there is, can Demai be used, or what happens if one does eat Demai even though he wasn't supposed to? Now, we'll be lenient here, as you'll see in this mission, in a number of cases. The reason why we're lenient is because, in truth, as we'll see in the next parak, a person who's an ani, who's poor, is allowed to eat Demai without further tithes. Because, as we discussed before, Demai is midoraisa, okay to be eaten as is, and was only forbidden rabbinically, either because it's a suffix or because the rabbi said people should take tithing more seriously and not rely on the thin majority of people who tithe properly. Be that as it may, here the Mishnah says, Hademai, when it comes to Demai, Ma'arvin bo, you can use it as an Eruv. Now, when we speak about Eruv here, we're talking about two separate things that really are rather unrelated. One is Eruv Tchumen and one is an Erev Chatzeros. I'll discuss them both. An Erev Tchumen is got to do with the fact that one may not go beyond 2,000 amos, beyond the boundaries of the place where of his town, his Makom Shvisa, his home base for Shabbos. And let's say, for argument's sake, he wants to go to a bris in the next town over, and that next town over is 3,000 amos away from the edge of his town. So therefore, he couldn't go the distance on Shabbos. That's a prohibition of going outside of the Tchum, beyond the boundary. However, a person could set up a Makom Shvisa, a home base for Shabbos, elsewhere than his home, like with a picnic basket in the middle between the two cities, let's say for argument's sake, in the very middle at 1,500 amos from each. And since that is his Makom Shvisa, his home for Shabbos, and both cities are within the Tchum now, within the borders of the 2,000 amos, he can go freely between one town and the other town. So the ability to merge those two domains is called Eruv, to merge, Tchumen, domains. And to do so, he has to have food that's edible for him placed in that place where he wants his home base to be on Erev Shabbos when Shabbos comes in. So since the food needs to be edible, and if it's inedible, forbidden to be eaten, then it would not constitute a valid Erev Tchumen. The Mishnah is saying if he set up Demai food as his food for his Erev Tchumen, it still works because really a person could eat Demai under certain circumstances. Like, for example, if at any time he wants to, he could just mafkir his nechasim, he could renounce ownership to all his property, and then he would be an ani, a poor person, and allowed to eat demai. Therefore, the Mishnah says one could use demai as his erev tchumen. The other kind of erev we're talking about here is an erev chatzeros, a merging of different chatzeros. Here, what that is the Torah forbade to transfer from one domain, a reshus hayachid, to another domain, a reshus harabim, from private to public domain on Shabbos. The rabbis extended that, however, to say, even if you're going from one private domain to another private domain, let's say, for example, you share a common backyard or share a lobby or something in a building or in your cul-de-sac, a chatzer is a shared yard. So since that yard really, although it might be legally a reshus hayachid because it has walls around it, like the lobby of a hotel or something, or a fenced-in backyard, nevertheless, it doesn't feel like a real private domain, in as much as various people from the little neighborhood around the yard can use it equally. So the rabbi said that if you're going to use a common space, which is legally reshus hayachid, but feels psychologically like a shared, more public area, you have to unite those areas. And the way you unite it is with an eruv. Now, an eruv, people think, means the sticks and poles that go around the area. That's not an Erev, that's just setting up machitzas, the walls around the area that will be enclosed and defined as the single unified area. But what unifies that area, once the machitzas, the walls, the boundaries are up, is some shared food which everyone has equal right and access to. And that has to be, in the case of Erev Chatzeros anyways, bread. So here we're saying, and it has to be edible food, edible bread. If it would be forbidden bread, it wouldn't work. So here we're saying, if the bread that's used to make the Erev Chatzeros is Demai bread, even though really lecharchila, a person shouldn't eat their bread without taking the tithes first, it still works to make an Erev because in theory, anybody who wanted to could eat their bread by first renouncing ownership to all his possessions and then becoming an ani and then being allowed to eat that bread without further tithing. Mishnah continues on. U'mishtatzimbo, you can make a shetufim mevaos, which is a similar idea. It's combining of alleyways instead of a chatzer, which is shared by different people. The alleyways, the way that the urban planning was in the time of Chazal, there were a number of chatzeros, you know, cul-de-sac, yard-type areas with residents around a single mavui, a single alleyway, and those the mavui would lead to Rishus HaRab in the main road. In any case, the alleyway, that mavui, could also be built up to be Rishus HaYachid Midoraisa, but it sure feels like Rishus HaRab because all sorts of strangers walk around there between, you know, other people's neighborhoods, other people's chatzeros, and therefore the rabbi said you can't carry in the mavui, even if it's got walls around it, unless you have a shituf, something that unites the people in the alleyway, which would be food. And here we're saying that food must be edible, and therefore you might have thought it's a problem to use demai food as your combining element, your shituf and mavos. But the Mishnah says it's okay since for same reasons above. In theory, people could eat it by first relinquishing their ownership. So therefore, you can use demai as the food for your shituf and mavos, and will work. The next line of the Mishnah, Umavarchin alav, you're going to misunderstand if you don't pay attention. It does not mean you make a blessing on it when you tithe it. No, not true. There's no blessing to be made when one separates the tithes out of doubt from demai. Umavarchin alav, and one blesses on it, is referring to making, according to Bartanura, a bracha achrona, and others a bracha rishona, as well, on the demai. That is to say, normally, when one eats forbidden food, he may not make a bracha on it before eating it, because that is blasphemous, it's forbidden, and how do you thank Hashem for doing something that Hashem didn't allow you and want you to do, and that's destructive to your person, your soul. But in the case of demai, we're saying since there is a way where you could make it permissible to eat, it's not so bad that if one did eat it, he wouldn't make a bracha achrona on it. Rather, he does, says the Bartanura, make a bracha achrona, and according to others, bracha rishona as well. Umazamnalav, one makes a zimun on his demai. That is to say, if people had a meal of demai bread and they did it in a prohibited way, they were bad people, they broke the law. Nevertheless, one, after the fact, would make a zimun, meaning if three men ate together, they would do the zimun invitation before the benching, because they're considered still be unified. There, one might have a havamina that since it's forbidden, one can't really be unified in a Torah concept way if he is a partner in a crime. But this is really like a lesser crime, if you will, that can, since in theory they could have made it permissible, it's not so forbidden to them. And therefore, after the fact, if they ate the forbidden demai, they can make a zimun on it. They must make a zimun on it. And the Mishnah says, umafrishno so arum, which means, literally, one can separate the tithes, meaning that Trumas Meiser, as well as the Kedusha of the Meiser Sheni, as well as the declarations of the Meiser Rishon, or Meiser Ani, one could do that while he's naked. Now, the point of the Mishnah is that normally there's a rule that requires your machane, your personal private environment, to be kadosh, to be sanctified, and to not have an ervas davar to be seen, a unseemly thing. Ervas davar really is unseemly, but it has like a nakedness concept. Erva, like, you know, one's uncovered body, which should only be covered. So one is not allowed to invoke Hashem's name or other davar shel kedusha in a place that has erva, unseemly, you know, naked things, and therefore that would be included in the prohibition of making a bracha while uncovered and invoking Hashem's name. But since there's no blessing required, no asher kedishanu b'mitzvosav, birchas mitzvah, of separating out the trumas meiser, etc., of demai, one could do it naked because he doesn't say a bracha, so there's no problem at all. And the Mishnah actually continues on by saying, benashmashos, meaning a person could separate his demai while he's naked, even during Bein HaShemashos. Bein HaShemashos is the time period immediately prior to Tseis, the beginning of the onset of night time. And Bein HaShemashos is a time that's not clear if it's day, if it's night, if it's a bit of each. And therefore, we are treated stringently when it comes to something that is a Doraisa on Shabbos. And tithing food, if it's Vadai Tevel, certainly untithed food, is forbidden on Shabbos because it resembles the Malach of Makab Patish, because it's like of the final hammer blow, because it, anytime one fixes a utensil, tikkun mane, that is a prohibition. And here we're saying that making the food edible is quite similar to tikkun mane, fixing something that's broken, and therefore rabbinically tithing vadai tevel is forbidden on Shabbos, and it's even forbidden during Bein HaShemashos, because Bein HaShemashos, that time might also be Shabbos. But here we're saying we're lenient when it comes to demai during Bein HaShemashos, since anyways, really, min haTorah, it's mutter as is and not being fixed, just rabbinic overlay, requiring a stringency to tithe the demai again. We allow a person to take that tithe, the demai tithes, during Bein HaShemashos period, prior to the certain onset of Shabbos, or Yom Tov for that matter. Mishnah continues on, ha'im hikdim ma'aser sheni l'rishon. If a person first separates the Kedusha of Meiser Sheni before declaring the Meiser Rishon to be Meiser Rishon as part of the process of being Mesakin, the Demai, in the process of taking the Demai tithes. So normally that's the wrong thing to do. Meiser Rishon should precede Meiser Sheni, hence the name is Meiser Rishon and Meiser Sheni. But if he did it out of order with the Demai, Ein Bakach Klum, it's no big deal. What does it mean, no big deal? In b'kachlum, there's nothing to it. Normally, if a person didn't do his tithing properly, for example, he took Maaser Sheni before Maaser Rishon, so then twice in the seven-year cycle, when there's the time of the Bior Maaseris, the getting rid of any remaining Maaseris, there's also a Vidui Maaseris. One declares that he has done the procedure of Hafrashas properly in that time. So and he would say, the verse requires him to say that he did everything that Hashem commanded him to do. K'chol mitzvosecha asher tzivisani. So he has to declare that, and he wouldn't be able to say he did it as Hashem commanded him, if he did it out of order. That's only true, however, for taking the Vadai, Tevel, tithes, Shani before Rishon, or other problems as well, of course. But if all he did wrong was tied his Demai out of order, taking the Maaser Sheni before Rishon, no problem. He can still say the Kechol Mitzvosecha Asher Tzivisani when he does his Vidui Maaseris as part of his Vidui HaMaaseris when that time comes. Finally, the Mishnah says, Shemen HaGardi, the oil that a weaver uses, Sach Betzvosav, he can use that oil that's Demai to anoint his fingers. So they shouldn't, you know, get too dried out or damage while he or she is working her loom and doing the spinning, the weaving. Since the rule is sicha kashtia, if one anoints himself with oil, it is as if he drank that oil, because the oil gets absorbed into the skin, into the body. So therefore, here we're requiring a person who does sicha, anointing himself, to first tithe any demai before anointing himself with that demai produce. You'll recall in the previous Mishnah, we had said that Shemen Arev, according to Beis Hillel, does not require the Demai tithing. If purchased as Demai, and we had a second pshat in the Bar Tanura that Shemen Arev is referring to like a salve made of olive oil as well as, you know, with aloe and myrrh, that would be standing in contrast to our Mishnah. There we said Sicha Kishtia is not a problem, according to Beis Hillel. And here we're saying, the Stam Mishnah saying Sicha Kishtia is a problem. That's why I prefer the first pshat in the Bar Tanura over there, that Shemen Arev is referring to oil that you smell, not apply to your body, the balsam oil. That would make no contradiction. If you go with the second shot, you'll have to differentiate and say a chiluk to say there's a reason why I'm using oil for medicinal purposes in the previous mission as opposed to, you know, more practical industrial purposes on your person is different. The Mishnah finishes by saying, v'sha sorek, when it comes to one who is not applying the oil to his hands, but to the wool that he's processing. The sorek is a person who combs cards wool, like a masrek in modern Hebrew is a comb. Nosin bitzemer pater min adamai. When the sorek, the comber of the wool, applies the oil into the wool to condition the wool so it should comb well, pater min adamai, that application of the wool for industrial uses, like we saw in the previous Mishnah, even though the oil gets destroyed, is not a problem, provided the oil is only demai and not tevel. One can use that demai oil without tithing it further, since he's not consuming it in his person, in his body. And that's permissible chachila with regards to demai.